are.
All right, the numbers. It's like watching like oil pressure come up.
Yeah.
What are you? And like when I see the uploaded percentage
bars.
Yeah, that's normally that means like once it's steady, that means we shouldn't.
I see it bouncing.
That means we shouldn't have an issue.
Right. I see it going from like 99 to 80.
Yeah, but it'll stabilize it at it'll catch up and it'll stabilize.
Okay, because you are definitely pixelated. You look
okay.
Like but Mario,
you still hear me?
Or Luigi, you sound gorgeous, baby.
That's all I care about. Okay. Hello and welcome to episode who knows what of the Hooniverse podcast.
I bet it's 359, but I'm not going to bet any money on it.
It's been a minute. You can hear the way I've said that. So a couple weeks ago, Ron wasn't feeling well.
Yeah, I was. Infirmed.
And then the next week, I wasn't feeling well. Now we're here.
You didn't get whatever I had. I don't know what you had, but we hadn't seen each other, so it wasn't my fault. That's all.
Oh, I just had like a typical. That's the funny thing these days. If you get a cold, everybody has to be like, "Is it COVID?" Which, you know what? Fair enough. A lot of people get it. I still, knock on wood, have not gotten COVID.
Wow. Good for you.
And I just had a cold the last few days. Like a regular, normal cold. Never was too sick to not work and all that shit. So it was fine.
I was exposed to COVID, so I was sure that I had COVID. But I got tested and I was negative. And I mean, I don't think that, I got tested like a week apart and I was negative both times. So, I mean, it's possible that I had COVID.
Right.
But the symptoms were different than the person that I was actually exposed to. So, you know, like could have just been regular cold or flu or, you know.
Yeah.
Something completely random.
All right. Well, but we're better now. Yes. And that's why we're here for all you wonderful people listening. I saved the questions from 3 weeks ago, I think.
Wow.
There weren't that many this time.
So much has changed. It's not even the same automotive landscape.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure.
February.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. There's one thing I want to talk about because I was just reading about it. As I was setting all this up, there was a theft of Hellcats recently. And I think it's pretty wild because they're saying let me see, where was this? The dealership, it was in Kentucky.
Right.
And this dealership, this crew in 40 seconds made off with 6 cars.
That's fucking amazing. How?
Yeah. Well,
I saw this headline, but I didn't read the story. So I don't know any of the details, but that sounds impressive. It also sounds like an inside job.
Well, that's the dealer principal says it should, because of the speed they knew where to go. It's likely an inside job, but the comments are funny because the keys were in the cars.
No, are you fucking kidding me?
Cause like they were in the showroom. They were in the showroom. They got them.
When do they leave keys in the cars in the showroom?
Yeah, they don't, especially in Hellcats.
Yeah.
But it's crazy because 40 seconds and the dealer guy said that it takes 60 seconds for the alarm to react. So they were already out the door 20 seconds before the alarm reacted. Amazing. And then the police response time is 3 minutes. So you have, say, a 4-minute lead time before anybody knows what's going on and the cops are going straight to the dealership. Amazing. If you're in a Hellcat, you're two states away.
Oh my God, dude. Is there a video of this?
Just of the, it's not an exciting video, but there is video. I'll send you the link. It's literally the showroom camera. Yeah. You see three people creep in masks and there's three like Hellcats and they like slap a fake plate on the back and then like one backs up, the other backs up, the other one goes. And it was funny too, cause there's the one in the middle at idle. Like, because it's on the showroom floor, the tires slowly like
like chirp. Like
it's like at idle.
Yeah.
Because it's such a slick floor, it wants to turn. It was really funny.
I've only ever seen Aussie burnout cars do that with that fucking crazy like supercharged lope. It's like they literally spin the tire like fucking just at idle with brake applied. That's amazing.
I guess they've already recovered like 4 of the cars or something like that. And then some are a write off, obviously. And then there's five of the cars were recovered almost immediately. One of them is in a neighboring town. And then, oh wait, maybe it's more cars than I thought. How many cars was it?
I read six.
Yeah, I thought it was six, but this article.
And I read that basically all of them were recovered. So it was just like, what the fuck were you guys even doing? You were just joyriding? Like,
I think one though, was all the way in Alabama, like from Kentucky to Alabama. So
I mean, I think that's just across Tennessee. I don't know if that's really.
Still scooting.
Tennessee's like this. Yeah.
I mean, that's true. You're still moving, though.
I don't mean to take the side of thieves. Thieves fucking suck, but that's just amazing. I love a good heist film. So if there was like footage of all of this shit and I could see like their system,
it's not an exciting video. I'll send it to you. It's literally on Jalopnik. It's sucks. Like these, they creep in, they, because mm-hmm. they had the keys. They fire up the cars. The first one moves out of the way and then the other two wait and follow it. And then they're gone. And it's real quick.
I'm sure you've seen that our friend Christy Lee, her Hellcat Challenger was stolen like months ago out of her driveway.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I think it was just last week. Maybe she released the home security camera footage from the driveway. It got stolen out of mm-hmm. her driveway and they totally fucking dicked around for like 2 minutes or more. Like they were just fucking bumbling fucking thieves.
Yeah.
And they ended up starting the car and the car had, I asked her, about it because the car obviously had an aftermarket intake on it because the supercharger whine was so fucking loud. Like it was so much louder than stock. And like, you know, I had basically the same Hellcat. So I was just like, God damn. Like, I feel like that would have woken me up. Like I was always like sort of fearful about like parking my car on the street in front of my place.
Yeah.
Because they're super easy to steal. But I was just like, man, I'll fucking hear it. If anybody takes off of my car, like you're not going to start my car and fucking get away with it. But that's exactly what happened with her car. And it was like super loud. Like, I think her car was a 6-speed and the guy, I think, stalled it and like just like was totally bumbling. Like I said, and I'm just like, damn, dude, like you think, I mean, she got security camera footage, but I mean, it's been months. The car's not going to be recovered. But
no,
you know, I don't think she wants that anyway. But it's just like, God damn, how does nobody hear that? And like, you know, like run to the door, or run to the window and fucking see what's going on. Like,
I don't know if I'd wake up. I'm a very heavy sleeper. My wife would probably wake up, but I don't think I'd wake up. I'm such a heavy sleeper. The funny thing is, though, with my Montero, I wouldn't hear the engine. But the funny thing is, if it's really cold, my steering wheel has four buttons for the horn, you know, one on each spoke. Yeah. Uh-huh. And one of them, when it's will stick a little bit. So sometimes when I go out in the morning to start it on a cold morning, which we've had like feels like months of here in California, mm-hmm. I will slowly turn the key. And when I get to the ACC position, it's like, burp. And I just shut it off real quick. I'm like, mother. To the point where sometimes I don't want to deal with it. And I'll pop the wire off. I'll open the hood and pop the wire off the back of the horn.
Really?
Because I can reach it. It's right behind the grill. But what I've learned is if I just kind of like massage the button a little bit to like wake it up and then go back and slowly turn the key. It's like once it goes past that and I hear no horn, I'm fine. Like it won't do it again. But if it's cold, it sometimes will do it. Like
that's
it's
fucking funny, like, man.
Yeah. So I might hear that, which is funny. so that I just thought the Hellcat story was crazy. Yeah, that sucks for Chrissy about hers. That was months ago. That photo she posted though of lounging on the Superbird
on the wing of awesome. Yeah, that was sick.
The Daytona or Superbird.
Anybody that has access and is allowed to sit on, stand on, lay on the wing of a Superbird or fucking Daytona is just outrageously cool to me. Like somebody likes you.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is they're supposed to be
right.
Like super strong. So,
if I own one of those cars, I'm probably not letting anybody fucking stand on it.
I would do pull-ups from it. Well, I would try to do one and then I'd be gassed. this is the truth. Like, never mind. This is a stupid idea. That's funny. So, I mean, we were talking before the show and you brought up an interesting topic. So I'm going to segue over to you talking about other high-powered American cars.
I'm kind of stoned, so I don't remember. I took an edible, which I brought up two things. Yeah. Okay. Corvette. All right. The Z06, the C8 Z06 is just like GR Corolla and the new Civic Type R, as we discussed probably two or three podcasts ago, the resale market on those cars, I don't know if it's tanked, but it's definitely chilled. Like, I think two cars recently, I don't know if they were bring a trailer or what. Again, I just read like a headline on my way in today, but it basically said those cars, two of those cars did not sell at auction for the reserve price. They didn't meet the reserve price, so they didn't sell. And like, you know, it's like, if somebody paid $150K over sticker for one of those cars, like they were going for, you know, a few months ago when production cars first hit,
right,
you probably are losing your ass right now. And you're probably amongst like the crypto bros with their G63s that they were paying $250K over sticker for just like 2 years ago. So, you know, it's like, I feel like the outrageousness of this new car flip market has definitely like eased off and things are coming back down to earth. But like, you know, also I think it's a referendum on the value of those cars too. Like, I've heard since we talked about it last of another car basically blowing the motor within like 500 miles or some shit. So like there's probably reliability issues that are going to come forth and there's probably going to be recalls. And it's just kind of evident that like, it's, I don't want to say it's rushed, but it's just not the perfect product that GM would like it to be.
Yeah. I'd be scared to be touching it if I were a tuner, because you wouldn't want them to think your handiwork caused the problem when it was something from the factory that wasn't set up right. But yeah, in terms of the value stuff, it's good that you specified new car flip market stuff, because there's still like stuff on Bring a Trailer is still crazy.
Air-cooled cars, 80s and 90s Porsche cars are still fucking insane. None of that makes any sense. I mean, everybody said it's going to level off or it's going to reverse trend, but that's not happening at all. Like, there's not any more of these cars being made. Singer's bought up every fucking 964 chassis they could find. You know, there's other manufacturers building their reimagined cars. Like, they're just going to get more and more scarce and or expensive. It's like a 964 chassis is now going to become a Singer Turbo.
Yes.
Or a DLS. So we're talking about $1.5 million cars based on a 1990s chassis. Like, of course, that chassis is going to be exorbitantly expensive now.
Yeah. Yeah. And Singer, I think, said they're going to cap the production run of the 964s at 450 of them.
So the original Singers, 450. Yeah. I think they've delivered like 250, and then they're going to make 250 turbos. And I don't remember on DLS. I think that's 100 cars.
But then after do they turn their attention to 993s, and that market's trash? Like, what's the move?
If they were doing that. So actually, that's something that I want to discuss, because last week they announced their sponsorship of a Le Mans 24-hour team. And I think that's super fucking weird, because their pre-orders, they're sold out. Like, of the cars they're going to build, they had to cap it. Just like you said, 450 of the original like Singer, the naturally aspirated cars, I think 250 turbos, and then maybe 100 DLS. So they've capped production. I think they've already acquired every chassis that they need. Like, they have the inventory, they have the facility and the production capability, they have the chassis. Like, their
new facility is sick.
I saw a tour. I don't remember if it was Top Gear or who, but I saw
Top
a tour.
It was Top Gear.
Fucking sick. Like, you know,
did you ever see the old shop?
I never went to the shop, but it was across the street from a transport and storage company that I actually had the Porsche at for a while. And they were also like friends of the brand when I was at Forgiato, and like, they would give us access to concept cars, to, you know, pre-production models, to the first delivery cars of whatever like new hot chassis was. Like, you know, I had the measurements for the Cullinan like a year before it was released. Like, they got me access to so many things. But they also stored, they were across the street from Singer, and they stored all the 964 chassis.
Right.
So they just had a wall of like 50 to 100 at any given time chassis that were like bare, stripped down, just ready for their full build. And then one of the last times I was there in 2019, they had a shipment of 964s that were imported from mostly Europe, because they were mostly right-hand drive cars. And like, they, like, what was sick was that they had in like shoe polish or chalk or whatever they had, or wax probably, on the windows and on the body. They had like all the intended mods and like some of like the color schemes, and like it was like DLS number 2, number 3. Like it was fucking sick to see like what those cars started as, because they're so pedestrian looking, you know, in their stock guys, but then they get transformed to these in fucking incredible machines. So
I never went
to the old Singer to answer your question.
I did go once
in Sun Valley.
I went with Francois. He was trying to convince someone he knows. I mean I don't know how much I can say, but he was trying to convince someone to buy one, so he got us a tour of the place. And it was like whole like no cameras, all this shit. It was pretty fucking awesome. And I just shut that off by accident. And it was really cool to see, because I was never like I thought Singers were cool. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was one thing that was funny was on one wall, they had a giant picture of Chris Harris drifting the car with a quote from him. And then on another wall, they had a Sam Smith one. So I was like, I'm like, dude, your picture's on the wall here. He's like, oh, they told me they were going to do that. And it's like, that's crazy. but it was like a small shop.
Yeah.
Granted, one with, you know, crazy workmanship, but it was like a few bays.
So then they were still farming out some things. Like they didn't do paint in house until they moved in this new spot in Torrance, for example.
That's the new thing. So when I watched that Top Gear video, I was like, oh my god, this is such a bigger upper. It's like the same size as like Aston Martin and Gaydon. It's crazy. Like, did they buy an old Toyota plant or something?
I don't know. That might be the case, actually. Yeah, since Toyota moved to Texas a few years ago, that's actually a very distinct possibility. But yeah, I mean, like, any gearhead would love to work in any capacity in that space. Like, it's just like super sick shit everywhere you look. And like, you know, they're firing up cars and testing cars and, you know, just like restoring cars. So it's like every level of development, every level of build is like on display, and like, they just do sick fucking shit, man. Like, I've always been super impressed and like admired what they do, and like to see it extend to an almost outrageous, like unattainable level. I mean, when they were $200,000-$300,000 cars, that was pretty much unattainable, but it was just like, maybe one day if I sold everything, like I could get one. But like now they're,
wow, it's untouchable.
Yeah. You're talking about $1.5-2 million cars, and like the craftsmanship is there. But it's just, you're buying a full experience of the build, like the spec, like the inspiration. And, you know, I just hope that owners are actually driving and enjoying their cars, because they're fucking feats of technology and like bespoke creation.
Speaking of driving and enjoying, and I want you to get back, because you were mentioning about the Le Mans thing or the endurance racing thing, but Paul Rivera, who I've become internet friends with, he's a dude who goes to Good Vibes. His family owns a famous run of guitar amps, which is really cool. And he drives a Diablo.
Sick.
he runs it up the hill. He has guitars painted after his Lamborghini. Mm-hmm. Cool shit. But he went to a movie with his daughter, I think, and he stumbled across in the parking lot the R33 400R. That Top Rank just sold for like $2 million.
It's a silver blue stripe car, right?
That's on bags.
Is it?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
Yes. The owner. It's on bags.
Who did that?
So it was aired out while I was parked there, and he's like, "This is crazy." He recognized it. And he posted. So I tagged Sean Morris, and I was like, "Yo, are you out driving the car?" He's like, "No, that car sold. Owner is driving it."
That's so dope. It's on bags, though. Fuck yeah. Dude, that's like a $2-3 million car, right?
It's like a $1.5-2 million car. Yeah, okay. I mean, it's probably only going up, though. Because $400, I mean, I don't know the number, but it's very low.
Right. And I don't know enough about that to like fully appreciate it, but I just saw the number and I was just like, really? Like, there's a GTR worth that much? Like, I was blown away, but I don't doubt anything anymore. Everything is fucking outrageous. But I mean, that's like a pretty much stock car, right? Like that's why I said it's a pretty much stock car, right? Like, other than the bags, like
it's got, I think, the like, wheels. I don't
the
know.
The inherent value of the car is its scarcity and originality, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Or it was.
That's so dope, though. I love shit like that because,
yeah, me too.
You know, for me, stance of vehicle is everything. And like, it's cool if a car is original and like, you know, cars from like, I don't know, before the 80s or 90s, like had shit stance. So I'm like, the first thing I would do is just change wheels and tires and like lower the car. Right. But like,
right.
To do it to something that's like that iconic and that,
yeah,
like rare, like that's just,
I'm down with it.
You're just doing it because you can. It's like, fuck yeah. It. Like, I don't like the way this shit sits. I want it to sit differently.
So what were you going to say about Singer and endurance racing?
They sponsored a fucking Porsche. Like, let me see, because I just read this last week and it was super confusing to me. And like one of my, and I don't know if you know Derek Whitaker, but he's got that stupid car, like 930 turbo that Magnus just drove in his new series. But Derek's also got like a wide body Fox body. And like, I think like a wide body McLaren Fox body from like the 1980s. And it's not an ASC car. The ASC cars were convertibles. Oh. These were actual McLaren Ford collab that was like, basically the homologation special for like a, I think like an IMSA racer, like super crazy wide body in like 82 to 85, some shit like that. But Derek like posted like on Instagram that Singer was, you know, sponsoring this race team. And it was like a huge leap for them. And I was just like, why though? Like, why would they do this? Like, honestly, like, I don't understand it. Like they have no trouble selling cars.
They're
sold out. Like, other than having like a motorsport, like marketing and hospitality suite, like, you know, that's worldwide. Like, I don't understand the value. I don't understand why they need to slap their logo on something that has nothing to do with what they actually offer. Unless they have plans for like some sort of bespoke hypercar or like crazy, because like here's the other thing that's like troubling about it for me is that the Porsche IMSA or Le Mans racer is turbo V8 powered. It's a hybrid, but turbo V8 like base. So that has nothing to do with any of the motors that Singer utilizes in their, you know, reimagined cars. Right. So it, like,
yeah,
none of it makes any sense to me. Like, yes, there's an attachment to Porsche, but I don't think anybody's really thinking of motorsport. Like nobody's tracking their Singers. Like, that's not what that whole build ethos and like their shit is. The DLS is like a GT3 RS. So yeah, maybe you'll track it, but it's not like a real competitive race car. So I don't really get it. Cause they're not a technical partner. They're just,
what if they have made so much money that they're just like, we just want to go to races.
But that's what I think it is. That's what I'm saying. I think it's just a hospitality thing that they're just like, we want to be part of the Porsche motorsport community to give our customers the full experience so that they feel like, you know, they're a part of a community that is involved in motorsport globally and, you know, also just like enthusiasm for these air-cooled cars, right?
Maybe there's a plan for Porsche to allow them to do this. Because that was probably a conversation.
Of course.
To eventually make this an in-house thing. Or like...
For Porsche to bring Singer's operation in-house, you mean?
To own them. Not to bring it in, but to own them.
Sure. Sure. I mean, that's possible. But I just feel like neither needs the other. Like, neither one of them...
True. Well, I mean, Singer needs Porsche's.
Yeah, but
they also need the blessing because I guess
Porsche, they can charge anything they want, so they don't need like special pricing consideration from Porsche. They can just, this is how much it costs. If we if Porsche won't sell it to us at a discount, like I was shocked to learn like in that tour video that they basically use like stock suspension components. Like, yeah, they've got specially tuned like coilovers and springs or whatever, but
that
like,
is crazy.
They use factory like control arms and shit like that. So it's like, yeah, they depend on Porsche to some degree, but it's like they're really just depending on the chassis that they buy. Like,
yeah,
anybody can buy. Porsche still makes, you know, OE replacement parts for virtually every model in their lineup, like, you know, going back to, at least through 964. So you can buy every little nut, bolt, seal, fucking shift boot, whatever the fuck you want from Porsche, but they're not that dependent on it. Like, they don't need a relationship with Porsche. What's a, is that a Porsche key or is it a?
Yeah, I have a Porsche outside right now.
Oh, really?
What do you have? I just realized that. I got one parked in the driveway. I have a 718 GTS 4.0.
4.0?
With the stick. Yeah.
How much power does that make?
Just under 400.
What?
Yeah.
Holy shit. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, it's the same engine as the GT4 RS, but detuned.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yes. So I'm shocked. I'm like, wait, they sell that?
Manual gearbox. Pow. Yeah, it's dope. It's 96 grand as it sits outside.
Yeah. That's the thing. Everything's $100,000 now. Entry level is $100,000 for a real performance car right now.
Well, I mean, technically, you know, a non Z06 VET is if you can get one, not in a markup.
Right. That's really what I'm saying.
An amazing deal.
But you have to consider a markup. Like, that is still part of the market.
The new Mustang sounds like it's going to be sick, especially the Dark Horse.
Yeah, I want a Dark Horse. I should figure out getting an allocation, getting an order slot for that.
Yeah, you got to get on that, bro.
I know.
All right, so moving on from, we started on Z06s and wound up on Singer, but which is a good segue because you want to talk about Lufka Cult.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I was kind of blindsided. Like, every year it's like, you know, a huge anticipation, at least in like our Southern California car culture. Like, where's Luft going to be? Like, you know, like,
I've literally, can you get never tickets?
I know, that's crazy to me. And like, I've never thought that,
and I've never been to one.
I know, you've never been to one. That's insane. Like, I don't understand. Like, everybody I know, and even, you know, friends like Anthony, who's not really into Porsche.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think he appreciates Porsche, but
he also likes just going to car shows.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is like, I feel like Luft is it has created its own space where it is kind of hype beast, fucking, you know, auto enthusiast tangent, like relevant in a community that like is not so into cars, but there's an intersection of cars, photography, just like California lifestyle. Like, it's very much exemplary of like Southern California, especially, but California in general, just like automotive lifestyle. Like, you, like our Cars and Coffee events, our Canyon runs, our, you know, just everything about like our fucking Concours, like everything about our car culture in Southern California is Porsche centric. It's just perfect for Porsche enthusiasts, especially like the earlier cars. Like, you know, there's Slow Canyons, there's Coastal Cruises. Like, if you got a 356, if you got a 991 GT3 RS, like, Porsche is just built for our lifestyle. I feel like our roads and the hours that we're able to actually enjoy them. So I'm never considered myself a fan of that and those types of enthusiasts, but it's undeniably cool. And you see some weird, unique shit. And like, the whole automotive industry comes out, like, you know, all of our friends are there, and it's shocking to me that you've never been to one, because it is a good time. Like, it is a fucking annoyingly, like I said, hype beast, just fucking hipster fucking get together, but
yeah,
it's a good time. Like, you can't deny it. But yeah,
I get it. I mean, and you actually did a really good job of selling the description of it, where you said it is an amalgamation of, though you didn't use that word, I used that word.
You're too intersection. Word. Intersection.
You're too high for that word. the intersection of the Canyon roads and the Concours and the Cars and Coffee. That's a really good way to like sell
Lufkakult. You actually, as you were saying it, I was like, I should go to one of those. Even with the Hypebeast D bags, I'm like, I'll wear my Jordans, but I'll purposely crease them in front of them just so they can.
You will be one of like three people Jordans there. Like, I gotta give Brian Scotto credit for this. He said something on the Hoonigan podcast and we were talking about Lufkakult. Like after it was like a recap, and he said that all the kids were dressed like candlestick makers. It's just like, what the fuck does that even mean? Like, but then like I pictured it and I was just like, I mean, I don't know what candlestick makers dress like, but like, I know exactly who you're talking about. It's like all these kids, like all the kids are like, and I say kids because they're like 25 children and younger. Yeah. And they're like dressed in like super oversized t-shirts and jeans and just like Vans. And they're just like, look like skaters from like the 70s. But like, I was like, candlestick makers. I don't know what the fuck a candlestick maker dresses like.
Their parents like, own stock in Paramount or something.
Sure. But they all look like starving artists from like the mid 80s that are like into skating. They're just like, they're like, everything is just so oversized, baggy and like nondescript. It's just like,
interesting.
But I mean, it's great people watching because, you know, there's, you know, people in their 80s and 70s that, right, you know, have cars that they've had for 50 years. There's people that have just gotten into Porsche and like have, like I said, like Hypebeast cars that are fucking on bags and like on fucking like speed lines or fucking Kinesis or like roof wheels. Yeah, they curate it. Like, yeah, it's like, There's a whole Porsche parking lot outside the show that is probably better than most Cars and Coffees and a lot of fucking curated shows. But the actual
show, they put the cars in spots too.
Exactly. Photographs, you got fucking Larry Chin, Jeff Zwart, Patrick Long, like organizing and placing the cars for prime photographic like exposure. Like they just create these like scenes and vistas that just like, you're just like, fuck, that's amazingly cool. Like, it's undeniable. I want to know more about this car. I want to know more about this diorama or fucking the surroundings, like whatever. Like, why is there a fucking tractor here? What the fuck is this Porsche tractor doing here from like the 1940s? Like, but they just bring you in. But like, you know, you can't deny it. You know, you're being manipulated. You know that you're being tricked into something and like thinking that it's cool, but it's cool enough that you don't mind. You're just like, yeah, you guys fucking did this.
Does it make sense that the next show's in the Bay Area?
I don't know what that's going to be about. Like, they only repeated venues this past year by doing it at Brewery West in San Pedro. And, that's the perfect venue as far as I'm concerned, because it's a combination of indoor and outdoor spaces. And I didn't go to the show in Indianapolis, I think 2 years ago. I think it was 2021. I don't know. But anyway, I didn't go to that show, but I've been to every other Southern California show except for the first two. And that location is super sick because, like I said, there's a combination of indoor, outdoor. There's a ton of outdoor space and like it's just fucking cool. It's industrial, but it's like, you know, there's like greenery. So I'm excited. Like, I almost don't want to know where it's going to be at in San Francisco. I just want to show up and see, you know, what they created and what they, you know, kind of scoped out and spotted beforehand, because they do a great job of placing the cars and selecting the cars. And it's just fucking dope, man. Like, but this year is, I don't know, notable because they are making it a weekend. So it's a Saturday and a Sunday show this year, where it's only ever been a one day show. Oh. And they're adding a water cooled component. So Lufkakult is Saturday. Sunday is what they're calling air/water, I think. So it's going to be a combination of air cooled and water cooled cars. So they're basically opening up to 996 and later generations. And, you know, I think there's going to be some cool overlap there, and I think it'll be fun to see what the organizers think is cool in the, as Jerry Seinfeld would say, the liquid cooled, not the water cooled era, because you don't actually just fill your radiator with water. It's liquid.
What? Why not? Pour distilled water in that motherfucker.
Just? You don't use coolant or antifreeze?
You live in California, bro. You're fine.
Oh, I don't do that.
I mean, I don't. I just put antifreeze in mine. But literally, if you live in a warmer climate, you can just put distilled water in it. It's fine. It's not going to freeze.
Do not trust that advice, because you never know when your car's going to get shipped. That's crazy. I know of a high profile car with a big ass fucking motor that got shipped from California to Indianapolis in the middle of the winter, and it fucking cracked both heads because they just put water in the coolant system.
Well, then that's their problem. They should have known.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you never fucking know. Put antifreeze in it.
The average person cruising on the street, if you need to put water in it, you can. Like, if you needed to.
Yes. As emergency use, yes. But I'm not going around advising everybody replace their antifreeze and coolant with distilled water.
Evian, no.
Definitely don't use Dasani.
Or Nestle. Fuck Nestle. Okay. Put beer in there. By the way, I have never seen this one before. I'm a huge fan of Kern River Brewing, which is what I'm drinking tonight. Though earlier I had a different beer. Kern River Brewing has a beer called Church. It's called Church, and it's delicious. But I've never seen this is Double Church, and it's pretty good. So I'm just putting that out there for anybody who likes their beer.
I don't love my beer, but do you think that's a beer that I would enjoy?
I think you would like the regular one.
Knowing what you know about my taste in beer?
I think you would like the normal Church. I do. And I have some in the fridge. So, you know, cruise on by. Your Jag's waiting here for you.
Oh.
which is a perfect segue, actually, to talk about how my car's going. So, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know I've been in the process of smogging this thing. And I found a smog place that has been letting me run it on their system in manual mode so that it's not getting reported to the state. We're just seeing what it, the first day I went there, I showed up and I didn't realize one of my plug wires was off.
Yeah.
which is why the car had a weird misfire. Popped that back on, got that fixed. I've swapped the O2 sensor. The numbers are really close to passing. So I'm stressing about that because they're so close and I don't know what else to do.
Have you done the Italian tune-up? Hold on.
I'm going to get to that in a second.
Okay.
So what I did is I just put new plugs in. These plugs are like the only ones that are approved by the EPA to help lower your emissions. They're like E3 spark plugs or some shit like that.
Okay.
But whatever, they're fresh plugs. That doesn't matter. And then I was reading about how like some people will do like a gallon. They'll like run their tank down. And I put 91 in this and everybody's like, no, for smog, you actually want lower octane. It's better for smog to run because it just, you can burn it. I forget why. I was like, fuck, I just put a full tank, two tanks, because it's the two tanks. So I got to burn down a bunch of 91, which is easy to do because this doesn't get good fuel economy. But I was thinking like, what if I threw a gallon of E85 in there?
Oh my God, what are you
mixed
doing?
Mixed it in.
What are you because talking about? Why would you do that?
E85 burns cleaner.
But you have a car that it has a flex fuel sensor with TPI. No,
if you mix the E85 in and then you go change your gas after and blah blah blah. However,
never
here's the
this.
Thing. Here's where I realized
I feel like you're giving out bad advice, bro.
A lot of research. Here's the thing that I realized: I've been shooting myself in the foot, and I'm a total idiot this entire time. I have my appointments to go. Like he squeezes me in at like lunchtime.
Sure.
And he's down the road. So 15 minutes before I need to go see this guy, I turn the car on for the first time that day. And then I drive over and we run it on the machine. I'm a fucking idiot. What I should be doing is go doing a highway pull.
Yep.
Five of them.
Yep.
Get the cat hot as possible.
Yep. Hot. You just said hot.
Hot as
possible. I know you're passionate now. You realize the error of your ways.
Fucking hot. So I'm a dummy. This whole time I've been rolling the car over. It's been on for 15 minutes.
That ain't doing shit.
Yeah. So I'm an idiot. I guarantee if I could, I probably don't even need to do all the E85 dumb shit I was just talking about.
No.
I just need to go rip it up and down the freeway.
Yep.
Switch to the lower octane gas, which is actually probably a good idea, but rip it up.
I've never heard that, but I'm curious about that. I will research that independently.
And then, and then when I pull up, if he's not ready for me, leave the car on, just leave it idling. So, you know, everything's nice and warm. And
I mean, I think even that is a time, enough time for the cats to cool down. So I would just fucking drive around the block, just keep ripping around the block if he's not ready for you. Too. But try and make an appointment and be like, I'm going to be here at this time. Fucking be ready for me to jump straight on the rollers. Like,
yeah, no, I
know it's difficult.
I've heard where people were like, if the guy's not, they're like, if the guy wasn't ready for me, I said, I'll be around. I'm going around the block. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going on the rollers. And
what? What?
So I have not been giving the cats a chance to get hot enough to do their job. So actually, I think the car is going to be totally fine. And funny enough,
I think so.
It's never run as well.
Of course.
The entire time I've had it.
Now you don't want to sell it.
I'm running right now. No. I'm still going to sell it. But this is what my cars do. When they're like, they can feel it coming. They're like, oh, let's clear that problem out. Let's clear that problem out. Let's clear that problem out. And on the flip side.
Let's make him happy. Let's give him what he wants.
But yeah, this thing, it's running like a fucking top right now. We put new pulleys on it. So it's holding charge at idle. We adjusted the stall lockup was wrong on it. So now I don't even need to shift it when I drive. Cause I, before I would drive it in two and shift it into D, it just drives fine in drive now.
How did it adjust that? What do you mean?
Whatever the stall lockup was set on the transmission,
Do you have a transmission controller? How is he adjusting that? That's what I'm asking. Something was
set up incorrectly on it where he's like, just pull that. He told the tech, the guy who owns the shop. He's like, just pull that. And they pulled this thing and the transmission runs fine now.
What was it doing before? He's like, or not doing? What was it doing before or not doing before?
Oh, that? Before it would, it was a, like more of a TV adjustment thing where if I just drove it in drive, when I would leave the line, it would shift too quickly. It was like, blah, 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 blah. So I used to drive it in two. And then once I got up to like 40 miles an hour, I'd just bump it into drive and let it go from there. I don't need to do that anymore.
Interesting.
Yeah. So AC works. Cooling system works. It's charging at idle. You know, it's, I don't need to drive it like a dummy anymore. And so it's ready to go.
I would like to drive it as soon as possible.
I would sell it to you at a certain price, and I hope that the auction would be more than that price.
Yeah, I know.
Man. It would be less like, than that.
Listen, I also would feel bad like making you make me a deal, knowing that you could maximize money. Like,
I don't think that's going to happen. No one
like,
wants.
I'm not going to beat you over the head and negotiate with you. You just give me a price, and like I'll drive the car and decide if it's for me. But I think it's fucking cool, but. I'm also, our buddy Mike Musto went and looked at something on Saturday and he sent me a link and I was like, that's fucking dope.
Yeah. But
like, if you buy this, like, I'll just say like, I don't think I'm giving away too much. And I think he'll be fine with me saying he was looking at basically older Mercedes, like 80s, 90s Mercedes. I won't be any more specific than that. And I was just like, yo, if that car checks out and it's as clean as it looks in those pictures, buy that because you're just like wheels.
It's not an MB market, right?
I don't think so. No, it was just like a fucking Facebook marketplace or Craigslist link. It was just like a local sale. Like it wasn't on any like auction platform or anything like that. And I thought it was a buy. It was, I can say, you know, I thought it was cool. And it's just wheels and like lowering springs away from being, and maybe a muffler away from being fucking primo. And I thought it was a bargain and I was like, dude, buy it. And if you don't, let me know because, you know, I might be interested in buying that, you know, unless there's something majorly wrong with it. I found him a set of wheels for it. I sent him a link to a set of fucking AMG wheels that were perfect for it. And I was just like, I hope it checks out and you do this. But now I'm like, Currency in just the past week, Currency, the rapper who has great taste in automobiles. He bought both a W124 with a full AMG kit. I hope it's all legit. The stance is no. Just the sedan. So it's like all white. It's got too much white trim for me. Like it's totally fucking color match, but it appears to have the correct 17-inch 3-piece AMG wheels. If that's correct, then it checks out. It looks to have a legit AMG kit, but it's just like, it's not a 500E. It's just like a 320E, right?
Yeah, sure.
But AMG kitted, like fully color matched and on 3-piece 17 inch AMGs. If all of that is correct, and I can't tell from the pictures that he posted that it is, if it's correct, that's super dope. He also bought a fucking R129 SL500, like a later model.
Yeah.
It's white. So I'm just like, oh, he's going through his fucking Miami Vice era. Like, he's just like all fucking cocaine white, fucking AMGs or Mercedes. And like, he'll put the right wheels on them. He'll stance them right. Like, I trust that Currency will get his shit together when it comes to those two cars. So I'm happy for him, but I'm also like, fuck. Like, every time somebody like influential pops up with like a R129 or a W124, I'm like, God damn it. That's just like further and further out of my reach, right? Like, that's another $5,000 added on to.
I don't know. I feel like our R129s, I feel like aren't jumping up. I feel like R129s are
hanging. The one that I want is the fucking Silver Arrow is still fucking like 50% premium. I didn't think that was the case, but like, I just checked tonight. Like, I've the last 2 days I've driven to work or home next to a silver R129 with the fucking hardtop on. And I'm just like, that's like, I love driving my S7. It's fucking fast as fuck. It's comfortable. Like, you know, hours just fucking click off like in that thing. Right. And like, yeah, that's great for a commuter, but I'm like, I bet that fucking R129 is plenty comfortable and is even fucking cooler than this car. It's obviously not as fast, but fuck, like, just do an exhaust and like lower it and put it on the right wheels. And like, I feel like it's like one of the most baller cars ever.
Oh yeah.
I just I'm fearful of maintenance costs, but if you find a car that's like got actual miles, that is not like been sitting for fucking 10 years and not used, like find a car that's actually been driven and maintained, I don't think there's much risk there.
No, I agree with that. So that's where the Jag sits. Montero, on the other hand, I figured out the check engine lights situation on that. It was the coolant sensor, which is what tells it tells the car how cold it is in the morning before you go to start it. So it tells you how much fuel to give it. And that sensor went bad after I did the alternator, which I found out through the Montero community. Shout out to Adventure Driven Design, which walked me through it, which is a great place to buy Montero shit. He's like, that thing goes all the time. If I buy an old one, it's like one of the first things I replace. They go bad all the time. So it just, doesn't tell it the right amount of fuel to give the car. Yeah. So I swapped that, and the truck is starting up much better now. The check engine light is still there, but I guess with OBD1 stuff, you need to drive it for like 50 to 100 miles for that shit to clear.
Yeah.
So I'm in that process because it runs fine. It's the voltage is great. Oil pressure is great. Engine sounds fine. It's just the check engine light comes on after a few minutes of driving. So I'm not stressing. Truck's good.
Yeah. You're also not trying to sell that. So
no, that thing's
as long as it does what you need it to do, who cares about the lights?
Yeah, that thing's not going anywhere. Let's slide into some Instagram questions, which, like I said, I saved from a couple weeks ago. So
3 weeks ago.
Yeah, if some of them are dated, we'll figure it out. Canadian MR2 V6, is Jaguar the company dead? That's a fair question. I don't think they're dead because they still have. I don't know, man. I haven't seen a product from them that
I don't know what Jaguar even makes right now. I think they make the SUV that's shared with the Velar, but I don't even know what that's called. Is that the XF?
Dude, so the XF is actually the F Pace is.
Oh yeah, is like I don't even know they're naming fucking
XF is a sedan. So Jag should stick to cars,
right?
And Land Rover should stick to SUVs, and that's just how it should be.
Yeah, but nobody wants cars. Nobody wants fucking Jaguar cars. Jaguar cars are like fucking Maserati cars. Like, it's just like a loss leader. Like, it's an instant fucking 50% depreciation. No, I mean.
I mean,
that's always been an issue with Jaguar, but like they used to make fucking cool, like sellable product. But like now, I don't even know. Like that, your car is iconic. Like that was some baller shit in the fucking 80s, even into the 90s. Like they made fucking cool shit. Those fucking XJRs with the supercharged, I think it was like 4-liter V8, those fucking cars were cool. They haven't been cool synths. I don't care what you say about an F-Type. Like, yeah, they sound sick. They're fast, but like, they're just not cool.
The thing is though, like the last XJ was actually like sleeper cool because it
super dope,
but it was all aluminum body. So it's the size of a 7 series and it weighed as much as a 5 series.
Super dope. Performed. The interior was fucking incredible, but like they didn't sell any fucking cars because everybody was so scared off by Jaguars of the 80s, 90s, 2000s and like reliability issues. Like, that's what I'm saying. I don't even know if they still make a sedan. I really don't even know. Like, I don't remember all the fucking names. I can't keep up. But like, their cars just have not interested me since the first F-Type supercharged V8 came out. And like, it was rowdy and it was silly, but like, everything else since then has been so forgettable. I have no idea what Jaguar even sells right now.
Yep, there you go. CNC Picks, our friend Leo. Is it still necessary in this day to remind people not to rev and bounce off the limiter at car meets? So this question was from 3 weeks ago when he got pissed at someone.
Yeah, doing it. I'm not saying he got unreasonably pissed, but he like sent it to me. No, I was like, Leo, I don't know what you want me to do with this. Like, yeah, the guy's a dick, but like, you want me to like jump on board and like talk shit to this guy like on Instagram? Like, I wasn't there. So you have every right to be upset.
Yes. Yes.
But
apparently it is still necessary, which sucks.
Yeah.
ROBV. Did you figure out what's causing the CEL on the Montero? Yes. Does that rig have an OBD port? It has an OBD1 port. So I had to.
What does OBD1 look like?
It's under the pad. It looks similar to an OBD2, but it's a different size and you have to hook up a voltmeter or a test light or something, and it instead of it being like reading a code, it like makes noise.
It's like Norse code.
It's like Morse code. Yeah, it's like beep, beep, beep. So I knew it was code 21, which meant this thing. Yeah.
What? Yeah. I've never heard of this, dude. I swear.
Yes, I had to do that. My life in Maine asks, how did you get into off-roading? And any suggestions for a noob? Love the podcast. That's actually a pretty good question.
Indeed. I'm going to go get a refill because I can't.
I was literally going to say this is a good time for Ron to go get a refill. So, BRB. Yes. The weird thing is I got into off-roading a long time ago. I was invited to the launch of the BFG KO2, the iconic tire that I love to this day. It happened down in Mexico. We did some of the coolest shit ever where we drove Raptors. We drove wide open buggies. I got a ride along in a rock crawler. I got to see Mike Sky Ranch. I rode along in an older trophy truck. It was eye opening to me. And I was like, this is the coolest shit ever. These vehicles are absolutely amazing. Now, not every type of off-roading is wide open Mexico blasting. There's amazing trails. There's, you know, there's rock crawling, there's mountains, snow, desert, all kinds of different stuff. So you should figure out what kind of scenery you're going to see. And that helps you determine what kind of vehicle you need in terms of axles and gearing and all this stuff. But the basics of it is to get into it for a noob, you just need a vehicle with four-wheel drive, ideally a transfer case. Theoretically, you can run fire roads in all-wheel drive, though, so don't let that stop you. But you don't want to burn anything up. But just learn the very basics of all-terrain tires. Tires are supremely important. Yeah. And then understand what tire pressure does once you're off the road. But if you're on fire roads, you don't need to be airing up and airing down. Understand potential recovery gear you might need to do, what toe straps do, and how to use them. No, not just having it and what to buy. If there's a class near you, it's one of the greatest things out there. But if not, there's plenty of YouTube videos where you can learn not just which bits of recovery gear you need, but how to use them, which is more importantly, how to use them safely. You don't need a high lift jack. Don't let anybody tell you that shit. Bottle jacks are amazing, and then the big bases for them. But like, I don't have a winch on my truck. I want one, but you know, you don't need all this stuff, but it adds up, and then you're going to want more and more and more and more. So suggestions for a noob. If you have a vehicle with four-wheel drive, ideally with a transfer case, find some trails, find some local communities if you can, because that's easy to do online these days. Those people are so happy to get new people out on the trail usually. And that's a good place to go to. So make sure you have the right vehicle, but it doesn't need to be as advanced as you think to just start doing this. Honestly, if you had a fucking Subaru Forester with the right tires on it, you could have a shitload of fun out there. So just you don't need to spend all the money. You don't need to. Tires are so important. That'd be my number one. If you have a vehicle that can move all four wheels with the right tires, you can go much farther than you think. Drawn Bradley, has the Safari All the Things jumped the shark since it's now available from the factory? I think it's quieter. I think the Dakar is probably peak. Lamborghini is up there too, but I think Lamborghini is where Dakar was the peak, 911 Dakar, and then the Lamborghini is where it jumps the shark. I still,
yeah,
even if it jumps the shark though, I still think it's fucking awesome. So I don't know how to say. What do you think, Ron?
I would agree with that. I think what is it called? Sterrato? The fucking
Sterrato
Huracan.
Stratato, I don't know. A potato.
Whatever. Like, yes, it jumped the shark. Yeah, it's the wet dream of somebody in, you know, PR or marketing at Lamborghini. Like, they're just like, they're trying to impress their five friends that they can make that happen, right? They can make that fucking car a reality and compete with the 911 Dakar.
And like sell it for the amount of money.
Yeah, just totally pointless, but, you know, there's an ass for every seat and they'll fucking sell them, whatever. Yep. Just because you can sell them doesn't mean you should make it. But I don't know, man. Like, fucking let trucks be trucks, let cars be cars. Like I don't understand why. Like, I just don't understand why that shit is necessary. Like, I like what fucking Lee Keen is doing. I like those, like, retro Safari builds. I loved Ferris car, like, that, like, unique color and interior. Like, I get it when it's something that's, like, aftermarket and personalized. But, yeah, I think you jump the shark or it loses cachet when it becomes a factory option, a factory offering. For me, that's just corny. It's not nearly as cool as like working with like a master who has like figured this out and kind of perfected it. Like, it's just nobody's going to use that factory car, the Dakar or the Sterrato, whatever the fucking Lambo is. Like, it really fucking should. It's just something to fucking shove in their face of their rich friends.
Unless Whistling Diesel buys one.
Okay, yeah.
You know what? That video of him trashing that Ferrari.
Which one? I don't know. Like, he does so much fucked up shit with all these cars. And it's like, I don't care because it's his car and he's free to do whatever he wants with it. But I've seen some crazy shit. Like, I think he had a G-Wagon on track and then just fucking launched into the tire wall and just like blasted through it. Like,
just to do it.
Yeah. And like, the truck was already fucked up.
He knows that video is going to, you know, like, that dude is blown up in such a short amount of time too.
He annoys the fuck out of me and I refuse to give him any views. Like, I won't go on his channel. I will never subscribe, like, or smash any fucking buttons for him. But when his shit pops up, sometimes I'm just like, God damn, dog, that is crazy. Like, forget about YouTube. It's just fucking crazy to even like risk your own fucking safety doing some of the shit that he does. And I'm just like, this is not, it's not good for the car community, but it's also fucking bonkers. And like, if it pops up, I'll watch it, but I will not seek it out.
Sure. Dissonant Smithing, how's the guitar coming along? It is coming. I'm at a place where I'm in a weird place where, as a younger person, I might have been like, you know what, this is hard. But as an older person, I'm like, let's figure this shit out. Yeah. And I'm learning, like, I know some basic chords, but my hands, to get them to move quick enough to those chords is frustrating sometimes. Nothing about it is frustrating enough to make me to stop, because I love it. I love that I'm doing it. I love the journey. Here's the fucked up part. Shopping for guitars online has replaced looking at cars and mountain bikes.
Oh yeah.
And it's wildly expensive. There's some great deals I'm finding on like low. So it's funny, you know how there's like Acura and Honda, there's like fucking Gibson and Epiphone, there is Fender and Squire, you know, so there's like shit like that, which is kind of interesting. And because some of the guitars I would love are thousands, but their lower tier brands are a few hundred. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then you talk to some guitar people like, nah, I don't like the lower tier brand. And then like a lot of other people are like, dude, they sound fucking perfect. They're so good. So it's this weird journey. And it's pretty neat, but I'm really enjoying it. I got some good blisters on the fingers at the moment. I want to add an acoustic because I've been learning on an electric, but there's times where I would just like to sit on the couch and actually hear what I'm playing. Though I did get a piece that plugs into the electric that I can then plug headphones in and sit on the couch, and it makes the amp sound in my, so that'll be dope. And that's no cool. One in the house will hear. Yeah. Like I, you know, I'm looking forward to that arriving. I've also got my ukulele here next to me, which it's made playing the ukulele easier. I've had a ukulele for a while.
That makes sense.
But it's a journey and it's fun. The crazy thing is my algorithm on Instagram and YouTube is just guitar shit now. And I'm like, oh, let me try this person. And I'm like spending money on different lessons when I should just be focusing on the lessons I already have. If any of you are out there thinking about doing this, I will say the Fender Play, which is what I started with, is like a really good basic thing. And then it kind of slows down and you get a little bored with it, but it's still really, really good. You just kind of push through that. But there's another guy who someone else told me, and I forget your name at the moment. You told me to check out, called Justin Guitar, and his system is, if you're looking to start, unbelievable. It's on my phone. While my wife and daughter were at gymnastics practice, I was like strumming along to like Four Non Blondes, What's Up, you know, playing that. There was a Weekend song I was playing.
Really?
It was two chords. So it's like a lot of rhythm guitar. Uh-huh. Where you realize it's like,
just strumming.
It's a lot of the same shit, you know? Yeah. It wasn't as exciting as it sounds, but it's like also with the backing track playing sounds really cool.
That's cool.
So I love it. I really like it. Guitars are very expensive and it's wildly addicting.
What about like, did you have any desire to play bass? Is bass easier? Like, it seems like it'd be easier to learn. I don't know if it would be applicable to guitar, but I just like, I feel like I can never master guitar and make it interesting enough and like, feel confident enough to like enjoy it. Like, I feel like that would just be an exercise in frustration, but I feel like I could fucking slap bass like rhythmically and like get into that. Is it,
I don't know,
known to be easier?
I don't think so.
To like learn?
When I said EO, I was joking because one of my really good friends, Derek, is a bass player. Like he's letting me borrow his guitar. So I was joking, Derek. please don't take this guitar back. I don't think it's easier. It's like, cause like, there's so many different techniques and styles, and you watch, like, go watch a video of Flea hammering the bass.
Right.
Like, oh, okay. You know, or Thundercat. Thundercat is like this, plays the sickest shit on the bass, even though it's just four strings or five. Derek, our friend Derek, likes to play five strings. I would not say it's easier because it's still a lot, so much memorization. Like, sure. I can figure out, I'm learning where the notes are on the individual strings, which is kind of interesting, and it's unlocking new levels, you know, like, cause there's only so many notes, but they move up and down and they're not in the same place on the fucking fretboard. So it's really interesting, but no, I would not say that the bass is easier just because it has less strings.
Okay. Interesting. I didn't even know it had less strings, but I just like, I know so little about guitar and bass, but I just like, I feel like, I've always wanted to be a drummer. I feel like drumming would be not easiest for everybody.
No,
but
see, drumming to me seems impossible.
Yeah, I think I get it. Like,
I think I could do the hands as soon as the feet come
the feet,
in.
The feet are a motherfucker, yeah.
I but feel like I could do the hands.
I was all-time drums on Rock Band when my friends and I lived in the Palisades, and like, you know, everybody would claim instruments, like, I'm fucking guitar, I'm fucking, bro, I'm all time drums. Like, don't even ask, don't even fucking pretend like I'm not fucking beating the shit out of these drums. I think we went through like three drum kits, like Rock Band drum kits, because I just beat the shit out of them.
That's awesome.
That's so much fun. But I've like, you know, I've befriended drummers, and like, I'm just like, yeah, you know, whenever you have some free time,
man, drum seems,
like, show me like a couple things. And it's like, that's never materialized. So I'm just like,
no,
I haven't gotten my hopes up. I just need to find a place. Maybe the Shitbox Speakeasy is that place, but just throw a drum kit up and just fucking wail away and, you know, get familiar.
Drums and piano are
totally
very, and I've heard if you can play piano, it unlocks like all instruments, which is kind of a weird
thing. Make sense. I played piano for a year in middle school. You had to like pick a music like specialty, like one period, fifth grade. So I had to do piano for a semester and have a recital and shit. And, like, I did okay. I mean, I don't think I was a fucking impresario, but like it helped that my family had a organ, like a fucking electric pipe organ.
Yeah.
So I could practice on that. But like my grandfather would be like, can you please not practice today?
Yeah. I was good on, in middle school, I played the trumpet and I was good enough that I was like second chair and I could read the sheet music. I could play along to the sheet music. Mm. And then when I got to high school, I said, band is for nerds. Yep. And I stopped and I regret it to this day.
Same. So, I wish I had kept on with piano. I wish I had done band instead of choir. You had to do one or the other. I was fucking singing arias. I was just fucking, I can't sing for shit to this day. So I'm like, I wish I had learned an instrument at least. Like, I think I would have picked it up easier as a child. Adolescent. Yeah,
it's harder at 42, but I'm really enjoying the journey. Yeah. So there you go. Last question, Sean Keeley, best road trip snacks. I feel like the tried and true for me is always beef jerky, which is funny because I never get beef jerky unless I'm on a road trip.
Yeah, I don't eat jerky. I never think of jerky unless I'm in a fucking gas station or a truck stop.
Right.
But
there's like there's some places out there where there's some good fucking jerky.
Have you ever experienced a Buc-ee's?
Yeah, I've been to Buc-ee's.
Where, in Texas?
I've been to the Buc-ee's, like the one with all the gas pumps.
I mean, I don't know if they're just one. I think they're all the same size now. That's what
I'm saying. There's one specific location that is like the world record holder for the number of pumps.
Okay.
Which is the one like outside Austin somewhere.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
And I was there in a Daytona, a Cobra Daytona Factory 5 car.
God damn.
Yeah, it was awesome. I drove Hill Country in that
car. You are Captain America. Buc-ee's in a goddamn fucking Factory 5 Cobra Daytona Coupe. Yeah. You are the most American motherfucker alive.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. That was that classic car show I did.
In that moment. Go anywhere.
I think that was our last episode that never even aired. we started in Austin. I drove an Olds 442 around, which was dope.
What year? Do you know?
What's that?
What year?
I don't remember. Late 60s. The guy who owned it was he was a principal photographer for feature films. So he would go shoot the stills on set. And he was just the coolest guy to talk to. He lived like outside the city limits. But before we got to him, we started in San Antonio with the dude who, I forget what his job was. He retired. He built the factory. He built it himself and he let us borrow it for 2 days. Like I did two laps around the Alamo in the car.
No shit.
On the street.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
And then we drove that out. We stopped in New Braunfels, which is kind of like halfway between San Antonio and Austin. We stayed in like a hotel that's supposed to be haunted or some shit. And we stopped at a Buc-ee's and then we switched to the 442. And then we finished in Austin on Halloween. And let me tell you, Halloween in Austin on whatever, 6th Street or 7th Street, whatever the fuck the street is. Mm-hmm. Oh, doggy. That was a hell of an evening. Hell of an evening.
My only night on 6th Street in Austin was in the summer and school was out and it was still fun as fuck. It was still just like, you know, there's no kids around for the most part. It was like super slow, but wait. I completely fucked that up. It was actually the opposite. I remembered we... Oh, man. Without saying anything incriminating, I remember we actually were there. We like USC had broken. This was my freshman year. Like we were done like for the summer and we were driving back to Atlanta. There was two car fulls. There's four of us driving back from California to Atlanta. And Austin was the best stop of the trip. We stopped at the Grand Canyon, but then had to soldier on. Like we couldn't stay there. It was too cold. So we had to soldier on to Albuquerque. From Albuquerque, we went to Austin. We got into Austin like super late one night. We were staying with this like friend of a friend, this like 50-year-old lady who's like a lobbyist in like the Texas State Congress or Senate, whatever. So we spent two nights in Austin, and it was their like the end of their school year. They had just finished fucking they just finished finals, so like it was like
the UT was going,
it was the two biggest party nights of the year in Austin. So those two nights were awesome. After that, we went to New Orleans, and New Orleans was fucking completely dead because it was May, and nobody goes to fucking New Orleans in May because New Orleans in May is the most disgusting fucking place on the planet. It was fucking horrid. Like, that was where it was just disgusting. We were like, let's just stay in our hotels. Like, bed bugs are better than whatever the fuck is out here. But, yeah, Austin, man. I love fucking Austin. I haven't been in 24 years, and I would love to go back for a race or anything.
Last story about that night in Austin, before we call it a night. I was with my co-host, who is this very attractive. She used to host a show on Discovery. You know, she Jael DeParto, if you want to Google her. She did some cool shit on TV. We go out. The crew was supposed to meet us out. We couldn't. They, like, couldn't find us. We wound up going out with some of her friends, male and female, in a fun group. And then someone suggests we go to a gay bar on Halloween. I've never been to a gay bar. We go in, we have a private table in the back. We're overlooking everybody. And I turn to one of her gay friends. I was like, hey man, this is me being like an idiot who doesn't know. I'm like, hey man, bathroom is like cool to go into, right? And he looked at me like the biggest asshole there. I'm like, yeah, the bathroom's fine. And then he pauses and he goes, but don't go to this other bathroom. I'm like, okay. So I'm not like totally crazy. Like, imagining like, all right. And then the funny thing was, the entire night after we're out, after the bar, and I'm like, dude, not one, I feel like shit. Not one dude hit on me. And he's like, yeah, they know you're not gay. I was like, oh, okay. All right. All right. The night was amazing. The people were partying in there. And then I had to catch a flight in the morning to fly to Maryland, because my wife was flying from California to meet me in Maryland. We were going to her friend's wedding that weekend. So I was so drunk from Halloween night that I got like an hour of sleep in my hotel room. And then I got to the airport. I had like, it was a regional jet, so I had seat 1C. Wasn't first class, but it was like first row window, first one on the plane. Immediately close my eyes, go to bed. I wake up to an empty plane that has landed in Maryland with the cap. No, in Houston, because I had a layover. In Houston, with the captain of the plane tapping me on the shoulder going, hey, son, we've arrived. Time for you to get up. And I'm like, yep, thank you, sir. Blah, blah, blah. Grab my bag. And this was years ago, so I was probably younger and spryer. And I was like, and that little nap was all I needed. And I was, when I met my wife in Maryland, I was like, hey,
fully charged.
I'm good. Not hungover.
Why did it fall on the captain of the flight to fucking wake you up?
That's what I'm saying. The entire plane deplaned, looked at me, snoring probably against the window. They were probably like, yo.
He's probably the captain's kid.
Yeah.
There you go. Leave it to his dad.
Yeah. There you go. That's episode something or other.
Yep.
And we'll try to get back on top of these, but no promises. Adios.